has to say. Not sure about the presentation. Do it in, tell me in English and then tell me in Vanilla.
Well, I want to contend our cause and have to write the message that we have to send on the paper, on the message paper, and then we have to read the message to not a Navajo and not a battalion or a company or the headquarters on the ship. The way we do it is, you say, third by two was taken. And the time had to be put in. So we have to read all those messages. We would say, we can spell a third by two out. Mount third by two, we can spell it. We have a name for it. We just have to say the name. You know.
Yeah.
And, when we said it, it would be written in English language first, and it would be translated in the Navajo. So they'll find another Navajo in the other end. At the other end, hit the Navajo speaking will be there. And our code message to be sent is by Arizona or New Mexico, then that would be Navajo message. When we say, we make a name for us, Mount Turbati, we call it Tepa. So Waz, which we can spell out, W-E-S, W would be a quote letter as a weasel, and the A would be ant, and S would be fish, that would start with S, and then we'd say between, and then we'll say taken, Haji, would be turkey. And A might be with a T N. Then K would be Izzy, that means a little goat. And E would be not, would be I. And N would be Nashi, and not. So we tell it this way, and it would be like that on the other side. I don't know. So I don't know if the message. Yeah. Probably over the hill or somewhere on this hill.
And what was that message? Would you just say it in Navajo? You explain it now, I'm sure that you did
before. You mean to say that you were taking it?
Yes. In the Navajo.
Well, I sent the message to it, so.
You told me the message to it, so. I know that, then I want you to say it.
Not so bad, too, yeah.
That all? Yeah. Well,
we don't just wait for the message to send. We'll be fighting, we'll be just saying, I don't know then. If that's when there is an opportunity to do it, they'll call us, they'll find a call us. We might be over 100 yards, 200 yards. Somebody has to come and say, where's on our message? Come on.
Okay.
So you have to take it down, then go back in your line. Always a name. And then sometimes we have to line up the telephone lines. At night, at proper food, we have to go out there. Like the one, I think it was on the 12th day out in the north. I'm trusting. So Jimmy Preston died, I said, and I was with him all the time. And then another man, we were at the radio station, and they told us that the man came from the company A. They like to have a wire out there, telephone line. So he is a corporal. But then he stayed. And then the lieutenant said, I'll go with you. I don't remember, Lieutenant Dean or Brown. He was just a new young man. And this man came from A Company, and Lieutenant, I put the wire on my hip and started running. But this corporal who came down got lost. So we went on. I know, I said, this is not the first story, John. our puppy is right across us. And then the blue puppy, the deer, the blue puppy is right in there. So I stopped out there and go out with a canyon. He said it's the right place. And they start, they definitely start shooting us. Then we moved back out. But we were right on the other side of our own puppy shooting at us. So,
he got lost.
Yeah. And that boy got killed. And I and Lieutenant had to work back out. And there were a lot of traps up in the trap to turn around and push the bird over. That's what we used for our protection. And we crawled back. That's when we got back. And we were told him we lost everything, even the corporal got. And we can't get us too far. So
you couldn't get your line through.
And we can't get that man that wounded out there. He got killed. He got shot right there. Wow. I could see that when he turned around. And when I got back there, there's Japanese with Marine clothes up in the front line. They were
really?
Us. Mm-hmm. So then I feel so bad and I lost all my strength that I was one of them that was out there.
Mm-hmm.
And the lieutenant told them that she got lost and we followed them and she got killed and had to come back.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of bushes out in the north in the rocks.
Fat
on top of what they call Gorgeous Canyon. The other side is Meat Grinder. We can't pick that hill up. But they were doing the 4th Marine Division and also the 5th Marine Division. And we had turkey knot too, that's the best. Meat Grinder is a big hill and around the flat, but there's a bunch of Japanese on there. So they have a hole all the way down to 60 feet, 70 feet down to where they can get the water, where they can get some supplies. We went through a lot of things there, but it's a long story, it isn't going on.
You know, it's surprising to me. You can remember so much more than anybody I talked to. There must be Dean Wilson. He remembered a great deal. I had a long time with him when I was here before. And but I talked to him. Arizona, I had not heard before how they would. I knew that there was some particular way that they would notify the need for a Navajo to send a message. But I didn't know exactly how it was done.
We also have a code at night, too. If we leave our company, we have to come back and say our code, too. And we did this a lot of times. That's for ourselves, I and Jimmy.
Well, what do you mean?
When you leave your area.
Yes.
At night time, you go on troubleshooting,
and then you
go out, but you have to know your code. When you're coming in there, the Marine with the guns on, also machine guns ready for you when you come in. Who's there? And then you say the code would be anyone of the state name, the name of the state, Arizona, New York, or the next one. We have to offer it every night.
I see.
We did that, and if this is against the red tape. I mean, this is the red tape. We shouldn't do that. We went on at night after real dark, and we crawled around just for the fun. And we know where the jets are. We can hear them talking.
You just sneaked down. You were wounded, didn't you? You weren't supposed to go.
We're crazy with Jimmy.
Jimmy
Preston. That's Scott Preston's boy. But he died from alcohol after he was done there. That's what got me back up the building.
Mm-hmm.
And then the first word that I learned on Iwo Jima was up in the third batch in the evening on the second night. And I heard there's somebody making noise up there. So everything went quiet down. But you hear crack up there. But on the north end, you're sure you could hear a lot of cracking. And somebody said, "Move you, move you, move you." There's a marine machine gunner, with a tracer. But not a few minutes, there's a shell went down from the ship and exploded a few places. There you went, oh, needs you. I remember that word for a long time. And then I asked one of the Japanese, said, that's water.
Water?
Japanese, yeah. Water. I guess you would have died. Yeah. First.
Excellent. How did you find yourself in the Japanese?
Oh, I asked him about his music, you see.
How did he get in touch with the Japanese? In
Japan.
Oh, after the war.
After the war, and I was on occupational duty.
I see.
And I speak Japanese too.
I have heard somebody say
that. Watashi wa nihongo wo sukushi wa karimasu. Well, I speak a little bit of Japanese. I understand it.
Japanese.
Now you would say, good morning. Ohaya gozaimasu.
Yes.
And in the meantime, konnichiwa, konbawa. Sometimes something like the words that for me are almost like Navajo words, and that it's not quite right. And we make a story out of it. This is what he's saying.
Yes. There's a big dance over the hill tonight, or something.
Did you feel like that was not coming out of between Japanese and your language?
I think back to history, yeah, there is connection, some words, the Val and the Fon. Just like they have their own A sound, like the Wa, and we have Wa, would be similar to that plant, the name of the plant.
These some of these things you've been telling me are funny. Because you were sneaking out doing what you weren't supposed to do. But can you think of anything humorous that might go into the book? Something funny. You novelists have a marvelous sense of humor, and I didn't realize it. You're just as funny as you can be, and I just love it. And I just wonder if among yourselves, if you didn't have some humorous things to happen.
You can't laugh about it.
Well, I think I tell you, we're going to be around both days, are you?
Yeah.
You'll be here tomorrow, too.
Yeah, I'll be here.
If you think of anything in the meantime.
Well, I will.
Hey, baby, you just help me out. But I'll just turn on my little...
I didn't get enough sleep last night.
I see.
Think my head
Well, thank you. You don't mind my taking it.
No.
Then I don't
have to
write it down. This is John Benally, who was an instructor. That's right, you were an instructor in the code. And so I'm going to ask him some questions about it now. He spells it, ought to write B-E-N-A-L-L-Y. Mr. Benally, I just think I'll let you... start talking rather than asking questions. Tell me a little bit about, first of all, you were in the first 29, weren't you?
Correct.
You were in the first 29, and then you stayed to instruct the second group. Was that the way it was? Or did you, were you shipped across first?
No, my story started at the first 29 went through the what they call boot camp. Later on, as an organization, without Philip Johnson's assistant, he come in a little bit later.
Yes,
in this,
I understand that.
We developed, among ourselves, developed a system, what we thought might be able to be more comprehensive to our type of Navajo speaking. But however, later on, these codes were revised, but the initial back to the initiation of the the initiation of the code itself was actually organized and developed by the first 29 recruits. So it may have been revised a little bit later at the different times as the difficulties of sending messages demand that they be revised. However, after the 29 originally recruits that went through, then it was after the code had been developed, we were prepared to go overseas. However, the Marine Corps officers wanted more recruits. Therefore, two of us were selected, John Emanuelito was the other and myself, to come back to the Navajo Reservation and recruit more of Navajos that may be able to comprehend both English and Navajo fairly so that they can be initiated into the program. So from 1942 around, my memory failed me a little bit, around September or October of 1942, we were headquarters out of Phoenix, and we worked in Navajo area with some of the other Anglo recruiters for Marines. So we stayed here in the area. I think I took the western half of the Navajo Reservation. Manuelito took the eastern half. And occasionally we did work the same area, depending on where most of the recruits are. We were able to recruit quite a few, and they went on into San Diego for their boot training. And later on in 1943, the first, I think it was January or February of that, we were here about 4 months, in other words. And then we were reassigned back to San Diego area. Manuelito and I, at that time, Mr. Johnson had appeared on the scene as a one of the trainers for, and we worked with Mr. Johnson at the Marine Corps Camp Pendleton. And as things went along, Rex Kuntz joined us as an instructor plus Billingham. I can't think of his first name. But anyway, Berryman and Kuntz, Mary Leto, and I, along with Mr. Johnson, were instructors as more and more recruits came into Camp Pendleton. Most of the other boys left for the overseas duties, which was their turn to go. So after some time, they retained me with Mr. Johnson there at Camp Pendleton. I was one of the last Marine instructor that went overseas, and that was in 1943.
Did you serve overseas?
Yes.
What division were you with, and where did you serve?
I was with the 1st Marine Division, and we left from San Diego in 1944. And I joined the 1st Marine Division in Pavuva in the Russell Islands. They had just come back from a campaign in Petaloo. I remember we were there when the rear echelon came back into Pavuva. From there, we went on, we just had a rest period in the Russell Islands, and we maneuvered using code in the practice area and around Guadalcanal. Then later on, of course, the Battle of Okinawa came up. That was the 1945. Anyway, the first day we landed was on April the 1st, April Fool's Day. And we used, I was still with the 1st Marine Division, 1st Signal Corps. And we just landed and we used code very little, not too much. Wherever occasion arrived, we did talk to other divisions or other Marine Corps regiments who had code talkers.
Can you think of any particular instance during combat where you feel the Navajo code was of particular use to the commanding officer and so forth, carrying out plans?
I'm sorry.
Yes, all right. I didn't get my mind on it enough.
It didn't matter too much what division or what classification the message was. It was up to the commanding officer how he entertained the idea, either by code, the Morse code, or telephone, or and once in a while they used the code talkers.
Yeah. Well, can you tell me of any, now for instance, Mr. Draper is telling me about taking him out Suribachi. He was there. Can you recall any time? A tight spot, a very tight spot, where you think that the code helped tremendously.
I imagine, like I said, it was at the discretion of the commanding officer.
Yeah, but you can't think of any particular one that you experienced.
Sometimes I was remote from the code talkers themselves because I was assigned at different times to the commanding officer's message center, so I didn't delve into the code talkers too much. They had a unit. We had a unit within the First Signal Corps, the company I was in, but I was not in contact with them at all times.
Mm-hmm. Well, now I think maybe I asked you this question over the telephone, as I remember. What do you, can you evaluate the contribution of the Navajo code to the Marines in carrying out their campaigns? How important do you think it was?
I think it was a tremendous asset to the Corps in this respect that I don't think at any time the Japanese tried to break our code. They tried to break our code, but they couldn't come anywhere close to it. Now, the only thing that developed out of the, I say it was a tremendous asset to the Corps. But depending on, let me go back just a little bit. Depending on any two persons that have communicated together, have gone through training, if they were compatible in the understanding of one person to the other, they could revise the code between the two,
yes,
and come up with entirely a different set of principles or whatever you mean,
yes,
basic finance or whatever you call it. Yeah. This has also been real effective in this respect. However, if there were two persons who are not of the basic code was real understood by all people that we put through training. However, at some time, two people are not
compatible.
They're not compatible. Depending if they were not at any time work together. But it did go back to the basic code that we had developed for our trainees.
Now, Mr., this goes along with what Frank Thompson, you know Frank?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when I was here before, he said that he was down in New Zealand, and that time he was, you know, just doing radio repair and that sort of thing. He was not doing the code.
Mm-hmm.
And he happened to tune in testing a radio that
mm-hmm.
he was repairing. He tuned in and heard two Navajos talking using the code. And so he just thought, well, he hadn't been with the code for a while because he
yeah.
was transferred over to the engineer business. Excuse me. And he broke in Navajo, you know, and he said he gave him a bum message.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't about to buy it.
Yeah.
He said, I could not understand. I wrote down what they said, and I could not break their code.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then he found out that some of them had been taken, I guess, back to Hawaii for
mm-hmm.
some retraining and some changing
right.
and addition of
right.
terms and so forth.
Right.
And so that made him feel that really this Navajo code was really an unbreakable code. He
yeah.
couldn't even do it himself when he had studied it.
Yeah.
You see.
Well, it depends on, I don't think I'll be able to send a message or interpret a message from the original code we had at the upstart of the program. So I really can't say that I can break one now if I had to. Well, it'll take me a little while, though. But
you'd have to
oh, yeah.
remind it. Well, you know, I wrote to the Marine Corps headquarters.
Uh-oh.
Yes, maybe they'll go over there. But I think the Marine headquarters for clearance, you know. And of the code, because I thought maybe they might use it again.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But he said that there was no, it was not classified now that I could use it. I have complete the right to
uh-huh.
publish it. Well, I don't think of anything else.
I don't have anything else to contribute right at the present time.
If you will, we'll be around. And if you think of something, if you think might be, what I'm since I've come here, about the history that I have written out, the whole thing is verified. I know it is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
But now what I want is just to make it much more interesting to read, you know, and
mm-hmm.
there's nothing as interesting to the reader as actual things that have happened to the man.
That's right.
You know, these real instances of how...
Can I turn this off?
Yes,
No, I didn't have any real deep religious ties in as far as Navajo religion is concerned. I was not, in other words, if you had the Navajo religion states, if you had any contact with the enemy or any other than Navajos, they usually have a squaw dance to clear their conscience.
Blessing way.
Yeah, I never had
this have
that. Particular.
Right.
Yeah.
You didn't have it. Well,
I guess it's the reason for it is I've been away to boarding school, and I've been away to away from the influence of Navajo religion.
Yes.
I'd say that's probably the reason for it.
Well, it does make a difference. Well, thanks so much.
You bet.
Back to the days when I lived among and snowed in for 10 days and marooned and cut off from any communication. Through those years of hardship and trial and triumph, I came to know something about Navajo character and why, perhaps, they call themselves Diné. So, when the Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor and we were lost in the World War II, the origin of the code, the beginning, has been repeated so many times in the papers and elsewhere that I need not recount any of the ideas that brought it into being. But for the benefit of those post office here today, who were in camp learning the code, studying day and night to master within 4 sharp weeks, 411 words and a long alphabet with lots of its alphabets, was really a phenomenal feat of memory. And I don't know to this day how they could react so quickly to those substitute words in that, the substitute for English words, and to react to them in the merest fraction of a second and get their code messages accurate, complete. Now those veterans who are here today will recall long hours of study that they put in to master that code. But there was another side to the story, the side that I represented, and I think perhaps an incident or two might be in order to show these men who became code talkers what I was doing in the meantime. If I were to pick out, to select one incident to show that I had my own difficulties and trials, I think it would be, it would start with one day at Camp Elliott. An orderly came over from the office of the chief of staff and said that the chief of staff wanted to see me immediately. I went to the office and he handed me some correspondence that his office had had with the commandant's office. They had written the commandant stating that the Navajo recruits who were training to be code talkers were a select group, men of high intelligence quotient, men of good education who had a command of the English language, that they were putting in long hours and hard work, and they thought, that is, I'm speaking now to the chief of staff, it occurred to him that a reward should be given to those men who managed to go through this very difficult course, namely, that upon completion of that course, each successful graduate would automatically, upon my recommendation, become a private first class. Now, he handed me that correspondence and said, I'm giving this to you so you can go down and read to your men and give them incentive and know that we're grateful for the work they're doing, and that each one of the quick support will remain PFC. So each class that came through, I'd send the office a list of the men who had successfully completed the course, and usually that was all of them because there were very few failures. That continued for several classes. We moved from Camp Elliott to Camp Pendleton, and I had my largest group there, probably 6 or 7 classes that finished the course at the same time. Now, each new class that came in, I would read them these letters, and I'd say, now you men have a unique opportunity. Most men who enlist in the Marine Corps, wait a year or two, and sometimes more, to become a private first class. You can make it in 8 weeks out of boot camp. Well, that gave them a great incentive and enthusiasm to work for it. But this largest group I had reached about a week before they were finished. About the 7th week, our adjutant, Captain Connor, you may remember him, later on Major and Signal Officer for the 5th Division, called me into his office and said that Major Jones, or Colonel Jones, at Camp Elliott, who was the signal officer there and who had to approve, incidentally, all of these nominations I made for private first class, had been transferred to another post, and his place had been taken by Colonel Cresswell, And when this mistress submitted to Colonel Cresswell, he disapproved all of the names. He said, I have some candidates of my own, and these ratings are going to them. He was scheduled to come to Camp Pendleton the next day. And Captain Connor said, well, now Major Sullivan, our CO, is going to try once more. He's going to ask this man as a special favor, because these boys have been promised PFC ratings all the way through their course, to make an exception this one time, and after that we'll make no further promises. So Cresswell came over, and Sullivan presented the case to him very eloquently, and in fact to the point where Cresswell practically told him to shut up. He didn't want to hear any more about it. So I went and got the bad news from Captain Connor, and I said, now you realize what the situation is. In a week, these men will finish the course. They're all expecting their ratings. And frankly, Captain, I don't know how to tell if those ratings will not be granted. So he said, well, he said, you go down and get them information, and I'll come down and talk to them. I thought it over for just about 1 minute, and I said, no, you won't, Captain. I said, that's a dirty job, but it's my job, and I'll do it. So I went down and got them in information, and I told them the unhappy story. I don't remember just how I did. It was a very difficult thing to do. But of all the things I've seen these Navajo recruits accomplish, it was a complete lack of disappointment, of ill feeling, of anything in the negative angle. They took it standing up like men, and I was certainly proud of it. And today I was just wondering if any school talkers who were present in that group, when they were informed that the PFC rating would not be allowed due to the arbitrary action of Colonel Cresswell. Now, why do you want to remember that? Well, there must have been about 60 in that group, and I don't see any hands at all. Anyhow, it was an ordeal for all of us, and the Navajos came through marvelously. Now to go on from there, the purpose of this is more or less, as Marcus said, a matter of dialogue. And we'd like to hear from some of the folks also present of incidents in their service which they considered especially important, are significant, are exciting, are dangerous. And I would like to hear from some of you who have something in mind along that line. So the floor is open to any of you, and let's hear some of your anecdotes, and we'll just go from person to person that way. So, Carl, what do you have? I think you better come out here and
I think, wait a minute. I've been sitting under just that cold thing, and I've got cold already. My name is Carl M. Gorman, and I was born in Tin Leaf. And like he said, I became PFC at the start of the war, and I was a PFC all the way through. So that's what he's talking about. My clan, I belong to the Gletchi clan. And my father is Kiahani from that Kiahani clan. So I come from a really powerful clan. That's the clan of Kiahani. We got a powerful history, battle. But I'm getting off the point here. I wanted to make this a little clearer. I think Mr. Johnson, Colonel Thomas. The first, that's wonderful. He started the ball rolling and got the first 29 Navajo Marines. It was supposed to be 30 Marines. But one didn't show up, so only 29 Marines showed up, and we were inducted here at Fort Wingate. And At that time, we were training. We trained at San Diego, the 29 Marines, setting up the Navajo code. We set up the Navajo code. It took us 2 months. And at that time, we didn't hear or see Mr. Tom Johnson at the camp. But after we went overseas, we heard about some more Navajos here. Yeah, he was, we heard about a white man training in Navajo. And so right away we started scratching our heads and pretty soon the white man would say that the Navajo language came from the white man.
From Chile, chief. And that Gorman, sir, was inducted in the Fort Wingate. I was 29, I was the 30th one. He didn't show up. We got inducted and went down to Southern Arizona. We were saying they were sneaking up through there. Down to Central, we hit Mexico and went up to San Diego. And we got in the base, we got in the platoon, we And we got in the barracks, and they said that to clear it out of your pocket. So we cleared out our pocket with knives, and Carl Gorman had seen them back there. We cleared out everything. I lost it, I guess, with a stockman knife about 6 inches away by the never seen it again. I carried that thing for about 10 years, and I lost it all. But we had a lot of fun during that time we was in there. I'll tell you one is this way. We were the honor platoon, and we were the best in the, we were the best in there, the best that white men can have. We was beating them. And one honor platoon that we was competing with was counting cables in Chinese. Our sergeant had the idea that we should count cables in Navajo. When the Navajos count cables, I think we had to take 3-4 steps before count one. Right then we just made things up. We just caught anything, we just made a step. Well, some bad work blew in there. It just turned to laughter. We couldn't march no more. We were all buckled up on the brake line. So the sergeant got mad at us, and we lined up and we caught again. The Navajo counting, and we'd start off, and we'd start naming everybody, everything. We wasn't even counting cables. We calling him names. Everybody buckled up again. We couldn't go no more, and he said, well, okay, then, no more counting. He said, I caught on now. Yeah. So we went through a break, one break. We were doing good. We was up in there. We was either going to get the nomination that Saturday or fail. We're coming down there. Last passenger view, the last one. There's one tall guy. We all of us were short. He was the one that was out of step all the way through. That's how we feel. We came in second on the honorable team. So we got the kick out of there. Went to Tim Elliott. When we got there, the 30th man and showed up. And we said, the captain got us together, Captain Latimer. He got us together. He says, well, you guys don't have to think of something in 30 minutes or call this thing off. So we went into his tent one by one, and everybody got in. You call it interrogated, or interrogated. And they got the, right through there, we came out, and he come out. And he said, McCabe, I guess you're nominated. You're going to have to think of something in 30 minutes or get there. Get these guys out. we started out. And I said, we got a small message we have to deliver. Small military messages. And all the things we're going together is service. Let's start off the service. First, like the army and division and companies and battalion and regiments and all of it. So we call them by clan, Navajo clan. So we gave all the clan names to the service, like the Ashihin is a division and section is the bushes. And I was thinking about it, he said, I'm thinking about section. So then the name of the airplane, we name it on the birds of the air. Then the ship, we name it with the fish, the sea. And and all those long words that we use militarily all the time, we just give them words. And then we mark it down, and everybody got into the act. I just had the whole thing. Everybody had their suggestions. They asked, we couldn't even find out a word for it. Carl Gorman, I don't remember that. He plays cards all the time, and he said that's part of Ace. So we call it A.S. Ace. That was it. We forget about the Ace no more. Every time we see the A.S., it's called Ace. Then T.H.E. kept bugging him. We have to give him a name. Every time he comes up, we have to spell it out. Repetition. So we come through there, and we went to school, and then we went through the field training. We started out in the field, we was in tractor. Then we went out in the field. We got the telephone wires all strung all over the place. Guys sitting here over there, and the rat all walking around. They send their message, and give it to one guy, and they sneak over there, see if it comes out the same way.
orders, and I got the orders, and I got the name of the boys and the name of the general, take it to. And so we finally found the general. He was real hard to find. I'm telling you, he was way back in the night. We didn't have to identify ourselves to go talk to him. We finally found him. We told him we gave him the orders, and he just sat there and he just called and went back. We didn't see him no more. We went to the colonel, some colonel there, forgot his name. We went over there and he was stationed in the tent area. And his chief of staff was there. So we told him what the deal was, and he said, well, I'll need to come back tomorrow. And I said, we're not supposed to wait around. Where would everyone supposed to wait around? He said, well, come